Welcome to our workshop. My name is Yuri Yamamoto. I am one of the co-editors of this book project. And I'd like to start by reading the preface of the book that explains what we plan, what we intended to do and where we may be going. Many Unitarian Universalist congregations have little diversity when it comes to race and ethnicity. How does it feel to be a person of color in a predominantly white liberal religious community? In the fall of 2013, we are having really hard time with the technology today, so I apologize. Find out. The project has led us to conversations, planning, reflections, fundraising through Faithify. That was extemporaneous. A panel workshop and many new connections. It's been an amazing journey. Are you a person of color wanting to connect with other Unitarian Universalists of color? Are you a member of a Unitarian Universalist community or another organization that is trying to become more multicultural? Do you simply love to read ordinary people's life experiences? Whoever you are, however you arrived here, we are thrilled to make connections with you now. In this book, you will meet 15 Unitarian Universalists of color who come from all walks of life, live in different parts of the United States, and are uniquely talented and beautiful. As such, each story is written in each writer's authentic style. Some of us have known Unitarian Universalism for decades, and some of us have discovered this faith recently. Some of us love our congregations. Some of us have conflicting feelings. Some of us do not belong to any congregation at this time. Some of us play leadership roles, and some of us feel invisible. We are proud to be unique individuals of color. Even though we share some experiences and traits with each other, we don't want to be defined only by the color of our skin. We present these stories to initiate more conversations because Unitarian Universalism is our chosen faith, but the Unitarian Universalist community has not always been welcoming to people who look like us. What can our congregations do to become more welcoming? What can we do together to become more whole? We invite you to see unique beauties in each story. Look beyond our styles, vocabularies, and grammars to see how we chose to tell our stories. Imagine a conversation with us. When individuals or congregations in the stories make you feel uncomfortable, we encourage you to reflect on and have a conversation about where the feeling may be coming from and the cultures and practices of your own congregation. Unitarian Universalists are called by our first principle to affirm inherent worth and dignity of every person, accepting that we all make mistakes, figuring out what to do when mistakes happen, and learning from the experiences are all essential aspects of the first principle. We believe that every person, regardless of color, has a story worth sharing. Sharing stories is an important part of creating a community that celebrates authentic people. We hope that our stories will inspire you to reach out to others and start sharing your own stories. And we definitely look forward to hearing from you. Welcome to our worlds. Now let us begin our journey together with love, Yuri, Chandra, and Tim. This is, sorry, it's not showing up. The tech people are not here. Okay, so what I'm going to do is just going to abandon the PowerPoint. That means I can see my script. So, when we were doing this project, there were many other potential contributors who could not complete their stories for various reasons. The project website will continue presenting, well, that's our hope, will continue presenting the stories of Unitarian Universalists of color. We would also love to come to your church to present our stories and facilitate discussions. Please take a card in the back. I think there should be a card in the back. Otherwise, the cards are available at the drum booth. So please take that. And our website address is https://uuofcolorstoryproject.com. So you cannot see the table of contents. So I'm just going to go ahead and start introducing some of the contributors' names and then short quotes from their chapters. Except for those of contributors who are here today, actually. Okay. So Christopher Cameron's story is the first. I am a history professor. I come from a very impoverished inner city background and sometimes find it hard to relate to wealthier whites, even if we share the same educational level. Tim, may I share your quote? Okay. Drum has inspired me to worship with fellow UUs and to continue my struggle to end racism as well as fight for racial equity. I believe that it can happen and that true change can happen, affecting the church, the neighborhood, and then our nation. As a relatively new member of a UU church, I see a bright future and hope. And the drum is an organization for people of color in this denomination. Mike Jenkins actually sent a wonderful recording, which we will not be able to see. So I'll have to look for his quotes. Christine Chow grew up in a predominantly secular home. It is all good to talk about being a connected, loving community. But where is this loving community when life becomes difficult through personal loss and when the shit hits the proverbial fan? Anonymous Mexican UU. I am originally from Mexico. Several years ago, I discovered Unitarian Universalism, and it was love at first sight. Lily Boyce. I am Lakota, light-skinned, urban, and have been in foster care, a teenage runaway, and in recovery from drugs and alcohol abuse for more than 25 years. I found in conversations with other parishioners that their reality was very different from mine. So I drifted away. But I haven't found a spiritual community that I like or resonate with more than Unitarian Universalism. Anonymous Puerto Rican UU. I simply do not fit in at the 98% affluent white congregation, where coffee hour and dinner parties consist of discussing your last trip to Europe. Elias Ortega Aponte, who is actually doing another workshop elsewhere in this building. Racial erasure is but one of the ways in which I have felt invisible among UUs. Another way has been religious erasure. Can I be simultaneously UU and Pentecostal? P.K. Knotts. I just got tired of having to convince people that it's in their best interest to do the thing that they say they are doing, because when people walk in the door, they can see it. You don't have to look very far to see. It's not very welcoming. It's not very diverse. You know, regardless how many times you repeat it, it doesn't make it true. Latoya Brooks. My education and career as a sexuality educator and social worker go hand in hand with my development as a Unitarian Universalist. Before knowing the faith of Unitarian Universalism, I became familiar with Our Whole Lives, the comprehensive sexuality education curriculum published by UUA. Camilla Jacob. About 10 years ago, I attended an anti-racism, anti-oppression youth con. For our evening activity, the group was told we would pick an affinity group, white or person of color. White or person of color? I am both. How was I supposed to choose? Why was I supposed to choose? And there are also eavesdropping pages that feature comments that I heard or read online by UU of color. So I like to read one of them. I was sitting in this meeting with a bunch of white people discussing how to bring more black people to our church. I was objectified. Why should black people care? And three awesome panelist ministers, Jennifer Kwong. Unitarian Universalism saved me from Unitarian Universalists. Right? So how could we stop turning people away, and how can we truly practice and answer the deep questions and yearnings that people come through our doors with? Carlton Elliott Smith. Being that we have such theological diversity, what I suspect has happened is that white culture has become the glue that holds Unitarian Universalism together. Sunshine Wolf. Is Sunshine here? Okay. Within Unitarian Universalism, as a transgender person, as a person who has liberal theology and social mores and those kinds of things, Unitarian Universalism has been a home. Sometimes I struggle with the Native American portion of me being involved. Now, these are just randomly selected excerpts and not the whole stories, but I hope you get really interested by these excerpts. And in the end, the books are available in the back. So now I'd like to turn to Jessica.
Thank you, Yuri. I'm Jessica York, your Faith Development Director, and currently serving as Interim Director of Ministries and Faith Development. Thank you. And, okay, is this better?
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So, this workshop is going to be interactive. There's going to be times here when we're going to ask you to turn to someone and do some sharing. If you're not sitting by somebody right now where that would be easy to do, feel free to come on down front, get closer to somebody, so that you'll be ready for that portion of our workshop. So the poets have said some great things about faith. The poet Gibran said, "Faith is a knowledge within the heart beyond the reach of proof." And the poet Tagore said, "Faith is the bird that feels the light and sings when the dawn is still dark." James Fowler said that one's faith qualifies and gives tone to one's entire way of interpreting, reacting to, and taking initiatives in the world. It is the awareness, the intuition, the conviction of relatedness to something or someone more than the mundane. Faith to me is about something bigger than just myself and my belief in that something. You know, an infant well attended to develops faith that someone will come when they cry and that someone will comfort them. Over our lifetimes, we develop faith over and over again. We have faith in our partner, perhaps. We have faith in an institution. We have faith that the arc of the universe may be bent towards justice. We have faith in the healing powers of love. Even those of us who claim a Unitarian Universalist faith don't necessarily live out that faith in the same way. And one of the reasons I believe this is so is because faith development is a journey. It's not an end point. We don't get to comfortably get there and say, okay, I have all the answers now. I am done. Faith also, I think, can't be formed in a vacuum or by sitting safely in a cave. Faith needs to be tried and tested in community. My faith is made more whole by my connection to others. Each faith journey is unique. When we are in community, I listen to you talk about your faith journey, and my heart and my soul grows fuller, richer, as does my understanding of everything that's involved in being human. So today we're going to hear some storytelling, and you're going to have an opportunity to do some storytelling. One of the reasons why we're going to process what we're processing today through storytelling is because that's one of the original ways that we learned everything, and we think it's the way that human beings learn best, through storytelling. I hope that when you hear the stories that you hear today, that they break your heart open and expand your definition for what it means to be human and to be a Unitarian Universalist. I wonder if you can think for a moment, just to yourself, of a time that someone told you their story about their life experience or about their faith, and it opened new vistas for you, new ways of seeing your own faith and your own life journey, and what that was like. Today, we are privileged to hear from some fellow travelers. What will their journey teach us? Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "Faith is taking the first step, even when you don't see the whole staircase." We ask you to step out on faith. We're going to invite storytellers here today to share their story with you. I'm going to ask Elandria if she would go first, and then Chandra, and then Yuri. I'm also going to ask them that when they introduce themselves to you, that they please share their ethnicity with you. I identify as Black or African American.
Hello, everybody. Hello. So I promise when I agreed to this workshop, I had no idea I'd be on stage all the time and other things. So I thought you'd hear my voice like once during entire of the assembly body, but alas, here we go. So I'm Elandria Williams, identify as Black and Native American, Seminole, Woo-Woo-Go, Florida, and other things that who would know, right? Because that's one of the things about being African American in the U.S. is that there are things that we shall never know. And all the people who are doing genealogy testing also do not know, because there are like giant swaths of places and people have migrated back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. So all the people who think they're from Togo are not. They're from the Togo Empire, which moved. And so that's just the interesting thing to think about was for some of us around ethnicity. So I was asked to share a time where my faith was not big enough, but I'm not going to answer that part because my faith has always been big enough. It may be the faith institution that was not big enough, but that is actually not a thing to do with my faith. What story to tell? There's so many. So I think I'll start with, I know what I'll share about. So a couple of years ago, I lost 15 young people in a year to police violence, and then another 30 to other forms of state-based violence. And then at the same time, I am chronically ill, as you'll notice me in my scooter going back and forth. I have right now 10 friends with stage 4 cancer, all under the age of 35, and then another group that are 40. So there are times, right, where we need a lot of hope. And we need a lot of love, and we need a lot of care. And I grew up in my congregation that I'm in now, Tennessee Valley. I guess that's where I grew up. And at the time, my congregation could not give me what I needed. It's not that they didn't want to. It's not that the people didn't care. They did. But that most of the people in the congregation, that wasn't their reality, right? And so while they could put up a Black Lives Matter banner, it didn't mean they were showing up to the rallies I needed them to show up to in the way I needed them to. It didn't mean that I got phone calls around Elandria, what is happening in your life? Those things weren't there. There was no immediate, like, clearly we know these are your children, what is happening to you and what do you need? There wasn't just an automatic reach out. I had to reach to them. Does that make sense? Right? So there's so many times in our lives where sometimes we don't get a reach out. We have to reach out. And by the same token, people were committing suicide around me, just front and back, because people didn't know how to hold what's going on. So I work at a place where people call me and go, I'm about to be deported. Can you help me? Where young people are going through the most intense things imaginable, and I have to hold them and really be like, what does it mean for us to be lay chaplains? And my church, and I would say a lot of the association, don't prepare us to be holders with each other without ministers. What does it mean to us to minister with each other? And so my faith institution wasn't big enough because it had got hyper-focused on the minister. My church didn't used to worry about the minister. Even with 360 people, we knew that we were our own church. Now, because we've gotten bigger and new people have come in after the church shooting, right, because that's my church, people don't know what it means to minister to each other. People are waiting on the minister to minister to them. And so that's when I think my institution of my church is too small. But here's what I will say about my faith not being too small. I left a guy named Martez Harvey's funeral, turned on gospel music, and sang the entire drive from Mississippi to Nashville, Tennessee. Got in the room, sang some more. My mom's going, you look really unhappy. And she's like, if you're going to keep singing gospel music, maybe you should go home. I was like, no, I'm going to this basketball game. And I came home and continued to have gospel music explosion because that's what I need, right? And my minister then said, you know what? They came to me and said, Elena, what do you need? Because you haven't come to church. And this time you've come, you're sitting on the edge of the stand just waiting to get up. I was like, because I know you're not going to say what I need again. And so he changed his sermon on the spot and said, you know what? Let me redo my sermon. Because this is not about people out there. This is also about the people in here. Because a lot of times we say out there, those people, without going, oh, but those people are like right in this space. And so from then on, he showed up at every rally. He showed up at everything. He took on the MLK Commission and shifted it. And so I just want to say that our faith can let us down. Our faith institutions can let us down. But there's also the power to radically change them. And so I feel like we have to talk about both. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm going to try to speak as quickly as I can in the interest of time. My name is Chandra, and thank you for allowing me to be with you today. I have to admit that when Yuri first approached me earlier this week about speaking on faith formation, I was a little taken aback. I thought to myself, you know, I don't have any special knowledge of this. I'm not a religious educator. I haven't taken any religion education classes in seminary. You know, how is this going to work? In short, who am I thought, to speak about faith formation credibly? But then I broke the phrase down. At first I thought, faith. Okay, that's something that concerns everybody, including me. And then I thought formation, and I said to myself, if I'm still here, then that means I'm being formed still in some way. All right. So finally, I thought maybe I can speak about this topic after all. So today I'm going to share with you some of my personal reflections regarding faith formation. First, full disclosure, I do believe in a higher power, however you might define it or whatever you might call it, whether spirit, ultimate reality, the universe, God. Now, one thing that I noticed as I flipped through this year's conference program is that a lot of the workshops, if not most, including ours, have to do with identity, right? In one form or another, as well as the book that we are promoting and that I hope you'll buy, shameless plug. You know, these things are focused on issues of identity. You know, those externals that society uses to mark us in some way, you know, gay, straight, bisexual, male, female, transgender, black or African American, which is how I identify, white, Asian, Hispanic, other, et cetera. And in a way, of course, this is a good thing because you use as a whole want beloved community, inclusivity, and are working towards that. But you know, in my quiet moments, which unfortunately are very rare, I know that my earth suit, as Gary Zukav says, I'm so much more than that. We are all so much more than that. We are all more than the label. We're more than the labels imposed on us by society, or that we may impose upon each other. Our souls transcend all temporary, superficial categories. So first, quickly, part of my faith formation has been the realization that we are all spiritual beings, but that unfortunately our externals provide a whole lot of distraction, which you can read more about in the book. Another thing, a lot of us here are high achievers. Good, achievement has its place. However, another thing that I've learned as part of my personal faith formation is that we're more than our resumes. You know, you guys out there are probably high achievers. We're more than our degrees, whatever we do for a living. We're more than our roles as partners, siblings, spouses, all of that. As a matter of fact, I believe that we can't even begin to comprehend the totality of our true identities. And a crucial part of faith formation for me is to begin to discern our true identity. Who are we really when you take away all the labels? And finally, I've concluded during my journey in faith formation that faith, as Jessica stated, faith is basically okay being okay with not knowing. You know, the more I live, the more I realize that I don't know jack. And that's okay. And formation, I believe, is how we get to that place. And that's where I am right now. And as Jessica said, it's not over, but this is where I am for now. Thanks for listening.
So, me surprises me all the time. So there are so many, many questions about, wow, where is it coming from, or discovering who I am happens. So this is the story I chose to tell. So I stumbled upon the prison ministry in 2015 by chance. Now, so this actually is after I finished writing my story. A church member and I went to sing at the soup kitchen a couple years ago, and a sweet young white man was volunteering there. Turned out the man actually grew up in the UU church and was incarcerated at the local minimum security prison. He was with his sponsor, who took him out to various places in preparation for his release. As we sat down to eat together, he asked us if we knew Spirit of Life. Of course, and we sang it together. Such a bonding experience, right? and I quickly applied to become a prison volunteer. Since then, I have attended weekly Yoke Fellow ministry meetings for about 1.5 years. About 60 or so inmates and 10 or so volunteers get into small groups in a crowded cafeteria to talk. I got to know a few men, mostly African Americans, actually all African Americans, with a murder conviction pretty well. One of them is probably a Unitarian Universalist now. We talk about all kinds of things, from families to interesting books, their situations and future dreams, injustices in the world, books we read together, and of course, some Bible and prayer. So I remember agreeing with a man serving a life without parole, asking me to see him as an ordinary person. When another man shared how he had shot a man who was sleeping with his wife to death, I just held his hands in mine. I felt that these men were my friends. Last September, my oldest son, then age 26, was arrested for marijuana possession, intent to sell, and intent to manufacture, 3 felony counts in North Carolina, after being caught for speeding. I struggled to talk about our situation at my church. My son already had a misdemeanor 2 years ago, and almost nobody knew. I was worried that my story would make many people feel uncomfortable and that they would avoid the subject or me altogether or offer unhelpful opinions about the politics of the situation, like, they should legalize marijuana. What does it do to my son, right? Digging in deeper, though, I myself have already judged and labeled my son and myself as his mother into the condemned group of people and felt very embarrassed about it. In other words, while I say that the guys I visit weekly at the prison are my friends, but when it came to my own family, I didn't want us to have any part of it. This hypocrisy was very painful to acknowledge. I didn't feel safe to talk about it, didn't want to make myself vulnerable. So I silently lit a candle for him and me on the following Sunday. The next day was my birthday, and I went to the Yoke Fellow meeting as usual. I told my friends about our situation and asked them to take care of my son if he ended up going to that prison. A friend of mine looked at me and said, "You should do everything to keep him from coming here, because the system is not fair for convicted felons." I know it, and there are lots of drugs here too. Then he asked me in the most compassionate way, "Do you want to talk to my mom?" I was grateful for my incarcerated friends, but I was angry that I could not talk to my congregation about it. Why can't we share the worst pains in our lives? What's wrong with us? Eventually, I led the service on prison ministry and shared this story. At the end, I asked the congregation, "What do you think of me and my son? Would you embrace me, my son, and my friends with all our faults and mistakes?" This, my friends, is not a rhetorical question. I could only hear several voices saying yes, but a few people came up to share with me similar stories in their family afterwards. Later, a father of a youth with drug addiction came to talk with me. They never felt safe to talk about the problems at the church, but I'm glad that they can talk with me. Each tiny step I take, I feel courage, more courage in my heart. So next is, thank you.
afternoon. My name is Mark Hicks, and I'm the Angus MacLean Professor of Religious Education, which is the Religious Education Chair for Unitarian Universalism. I'd like to, I have to speak directly. There, that's better. I'd like to begin by thanking these authors for doing this work, of daring to write these texts and put these stories out there, because one of the things that we know is that telling your story, telling the truth about your life and your experience is very, very risky, because there's always a doubt that you won't be believed. And so I want to commend them for this project, because when we think about the work of faith formation, it's really about telling stories that people don't want to hear, or things that you don't even want to admit to yourself. So I do a lot of work around faith formation and helping people to think about that work. And a phrase that I often use to understand what faith formation is really talking about, and you see this and hear this in the stories that we've heard today, is that when you get to a place where you believe your container, your life no longer makes sense, right? That's when faith formation happens. So I'll tell you a couple of stories very quickly that might represent that. So I'm thinking about the 45-year-old woman who realizes that she's not going to marry, and she sort of had this idea about herself as being a married person, nor will she have children, gets to that place where, oh, it's not true for me. At that point, that's when there's a realization that the container no longer holds. That's when that faith formation piece begins to occur. Or I think about the 15-year-old biracial boy who feels a strong need to reject the good intentions of his adoptive white parents, who keep saying, but we love you, we love you. For that child, the container no longer holds because he doesn't feel that, right? Just saying that doesn't make it go away. Or the minister who, like most members of his congregation, is lamenting the loss of their humanist orientation. The minister can't figure out why the Christians hang on to their superstitions, right? So that minister is at this place where it's not making sense anymore, right? So the container is no longer holding. So what we want to do today is to invite you into a process to think about stories from your life, identity stories, when you realize that the container no longer holds, when you take a risk to move outside of what feels safe. Does that make sense? Think about that for a minute quietly. We're going to ask you to talk with another person about that story in a minute. So think about something that you feel comfortable sharing with another person that's not so private that it's too revealing for you. But to think about a time when you took a risk, when you realized that who you thought you were, what was important to you, that story that you told yourself and kept telling yourself, no longer made sense. You weren't allowed to stay in that place. Give yourself a minute to think about that. We have some lovely music to accompany your meditations. All right, if you will turn to another person who's close to you, and you're going to have about 5 minutes for each person to talk, but to talk about a time. It's probably best if you isolate an experience, a time like a crystallized experience that says, here's a time when my container no longer held. I need it to be bigger than I am right now.
George W. Soul Work was a book podcast that started this whole soul work thing. We also did the Ninja program after that. And wonderful things that happened. So that's my story. That's my, but I know other people.
And if the second person hasn't had a chance to share, you may want to make sure the second person is sharing.
It took me a long time to realize.
Okay, so if you could bring your conversation to a close, finish your thoughts. Okay, so we'd like to have a little bit of time to think about the insights that you gained from this conversation. I was lucky enough to have a conversation with Judy here, and I think I learned as much about myself listening to her, and I think it was the opposite was going on as well. So we'd really like to focus on sort of the wisdom of the conversation that emerged for you. What are you learning about how that story of breaking out of that identity barrier, right, was useful to you? Yes.
To be brave and to stand up and
we're going to bring the microphone to you so other people can hear. We want you to be heard, sir.
Yes. I'm Donald Davis from the First Unitarian Church of Berks County, Reading, Pennsylvania, and just to be brave, to believe in your convictions, believe in yourself, have faith in that you are correct in what you believe, and just go forward and say what you mean.
Can you talk about how the kind of risk that it took for you to get to that conclusion?
The story that I explained was the George Zimmerman verdict. There was no word in my congregation for 3 straight weeks, and it was just very upsetting. And that fourth week, I started a book read, Soul Work.
Yeah.
And from there, we moved on to the New Jim Crow, did Jubilee, did Beloved Conversations,
thank you,
and Adore. And that's been my faith molding, as she put right now.
So there's a lot of confidence that happens once you begin to live in that broader way. Let's hear some other insights about yourself and your story. In the back. Look, Yuri, all the way in the back.
Could you?
Yes.
Well, it goes all the way. Hi, I'm Marilee. I'm from the Olympia Brown UU Church in Racine, Wisconsin.
Yes.
And I went through an experience that led me. I had been a corrections professional for over 20 years, had an encounter with an inmate that basically shook my belief system, because the Department of Corrections expects you to be a corrections professional first. I'm a social worker. Corrections professional first, social worker second, human third. And I connected with a former inmate who was dying and realized that I could do nothing to help this individual. And if it was any other person on the planet, I could have made casseroles, driven, blah, 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 blah. And I said I couldn't do this anymore. And that realization that I had to be a human first, social worker second, corrections professional third, knew I had to do that, but it wouldn't fly with my employer. But it gave me the conviction, gave me the courage to not only seek another employment, but then also to leave an unhappy marriage of 32 years, buy a house all by myself with my 2 daughters, and has led to fostering much better relations with both of my daughters, who wanted me to leave for a long time, but understood why I didn't, because financially I couldn't. But I figured out I can live at the poverty level. I can do it. And by golly, I've been doing it for 3 years now, and it works. So.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. The stories of these breakthroughs often, while they might happen in a certain part of your life, actually begin to expand to other parts of your life where you have more confidence in a variety of different ways. So thank you. Thank you for that. Another person. Leary, over there.
I am reflecting now about how I was living for a number of years with an undiagnosed mental illness. And, I had gone through the Army. I had gone back to school, gotten a, you know, a master's degree. All of these times, all of these things I was doing and developing what I had hoped was going to be a successful career, and yet I was continuing, every so often I would have a break and then have to kind of start over. And it was, I guess, too scary for me to try and figure out why this was happening until I finally just kind of lost everything about 12 to 15 years ago. And I finally got help through the Veterans Administration, and now I am different. I developed a whole new career, accepting who I am, and now I have an influence on others. I have a chance to help others understand that it's not right. too scary to get help. And many of the people, black and white, that I'm reaching are, I guess, understanding that if I can do it, they can do it.
Beautiful. I have one more person to bear witness for us. Yes.
Yes. I was a social worker, and I thought I knew, I thought of myself as somebody who didn't really judge people, but was really open to seeing who they were over time. But that's never totally true. And I had a woman on my caseload whose husband had sexually abused their infant. In front of her, she didn't report it, and about 2-3 weeks after the child was in foster care, she looked at me and said, can he come home now? He told me he got rid of his gun. I knew that there was no way this person could ever parent, could ever be a substantive, strong person. A year and a half later, she was my right-hand person. When I had a mom that sex abuse had just been disclosed, and I wanted to get that mom into a group for moms that, whose child had been sexually abused, she was the person I used for outreach. She had developed such strength, and I just learned, you know, sometimes you make judgments, you think people are really strong and resilient, and may not be true, and other times you make the mistake the opposite, like I did.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. So in closing, I'd like to leave an image, a metaphor with you about this process, because I think the point of why this book was written from a faith formation perspective is to help people understand what is happening to you as you are making sense of these life experiences. So I have a colleague of mine who talks about these moments as dancing on the edge of meaning. Dancing on the edge of meaning. Because what happens as you are going through an experience, you're trying to figure out where you are, but it's only when you get to the edge of that idea, of that way of being, of that identity, and then realize, I can't go any further, that you have the courage to actually address what it is that you need to address, right? And so what we are doing as religious people, as religious educators, as faith formation workers, is creating and noticing those times and then being colleagues to each other when we get to that edge, right? So Alandria was talking about having that moment and sitting in her car and going home and listening to gospel music, right? She got to the edge of what she could understand. She couldn't go any further. And so that what held her, what supported her was music, right? Maybe it was a friend. Maybe it was a support network or something along that line that said, okay, you're on the edge. You don't have to go over. So where can you go? How can you open that up a little bit? And so that's one of the things we want to encourage you to do, and again, to offer gratitude for these folks for telling these stories about being on the edge and finding a way to go forward, because indeed that is the work of people of faith. Do you have any announcements or anything else for closing?
I fail to acknowledge. Jessica actually contributed the wonderful foreword, and also Mark contributed the afterword and a very special article about moving forward. So I want to acknowledge that. And I also noticed Reverend Carton is there. So I want to acknowledge that he was one of the panelists 2 years ago, and it's in the book. So the books are available in the back, and I think some of us may stay, sign the books if you like. It is $15. The way to pay is in the back. And if you don't have time now, lulu.com or drum booth 518. Thank you very much for being here. And if you like some speakers to come and speak to your church, please let us know. Thank you.